unforgettable. That's what you are.
Unforgettable, though near or far.
Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly.
Unforgettable in every way.
This opening number, Unforgettable, is brought to us by Natalie Cole and her daddy, Nat King Cole. We'll be hearing more about and from these artists later on in today's program. But first, these trivia questions.
That someone so unforgettable.
The recommendation for Natalie and Nat King Cole comes to us from Bill McClure. And I hope you enjoyed this, Bill. Thanks again for the recommendation. Our trivia questions come to us today from classicbands.com. Question number one, Question Mark and the Mysterians, that's the name of a group, recorded their number one hit in 1966 in the living room of their manager's house. What was the name of this hit song? Was it A, House of the Rising Sun, 96 Tears, answer B, answer C, We Gotta Get Out of This Place, or answer D, Summer in the City? Hint: known for its signature organ licks and bare-bones lyrics, this song has been widely recognized as one of the first garage band hits and has even been given credit for starting the punk rock movement. Question number two. Which singer and his wife gave each of their eight children names that start with the same letter? A. Hint: the singer's first name also starts with that same letter, A, and here's a snippet from one of this singer's songs.
I found my thrill. Oh, Blueberry Hill.
So who is this? The answers to these two very important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. The first article in our transition section today comes to us from The Week magazine, published on September 9, 2011, entitled The Last of the Original Delta Bluesmen. This is an obituary for David Honeyboy Edwards, 1915 to 2011. David Honeyboy Edwards rode the rails and played at Mississippi Fish Fry's with iconic bluesman Robert Johnson in the 1930s. We would walk through the country with our guitars on our shoulders, stop at people's houses, play a little music, walk on, he once said. Edwards was on hand when Johnson drank the poison whiskey that killed him in 1938. And six decades later, he was still keeping the original Delta Blues sound alive. Edwards was born in Shaw, Mississippi, as the son of a sharecropper and grandson of a slave, said the Chicago Sun-Times. His father, a guitarist and violinist in country jukes throughout Mississippi, bought him a Sears guitar for $4 and taught him how to play. At the age of 14, Edwards left home to hobo with guitarist Big Joe Williams, who helped cultivate the musician's distinctive style of uneven phrasing and skewed timing. Over the following year, said the New York Times, Edwards played or toured with almost every blues musician who worked in the idiom: Muddy Waters, Howling Wolf, Sonny Boy Williamson, all were familiar with Edwards' coarse, keening vocals and slashing bottleneck-style guitar work. After almost two decades on the road, the bluesman made Chicago his permanent home in the 1950s. He worked on construction sites and in factories by day and played the blues at night. Edwards never won the fame or recognition of contemporaries like Muddy Waters or Willie Dixon, said the Chicago Tribune. But the blues revival of the 60s made him a desired attraction on stages around the world. He toured endlessly, introducing the work songs and hymns of a black underclass to several generations of fans. He was inducted into the Blues Hall of Fame in 1996, won a Lifetime Achievement Grammy in 2010, and was still playing up to 100 shows a year, well into his 90s. The regular section of Transitions Today in Music History comes to us from BGORecords.com and MusicOrb.com, and today is the weekend of September 16 and 17. Now, if you were born on September 16th, you share a birthday with B.B. King, blues guitarist and singer. He was born on September 16th, 1925, as was Charlie Byrd, born on the same day. He's the guitarist, Decifanato. As was Kenny Jones, who was born on September 16th, but this time 1948. Kenny Jones was with The Who. And Earl Klug, the jazz pianist, born on September 16th, 1953. Or if you were born on September 17th, you share a B-day with Hank Williams. Hey, good looking. He was born on September 17, 1923. Lowell Cream from 10cc, born on September 17, 1947. And Steve Sanders, the country singer, the Oak Ridge Boys, Elvira, born on September 17, 1952. Miscellany in music history on these days. Well, back in 1922, Radio Moscow begins transmitting at 12 kilowatts, the most powerful station. And back in 1931, the first 33 and a third RPM LPs and player are launched by RCA Victor in New York City. And back in 1957, this weekend, Sam Cooke releases You Send Me, his first hit, and it goes all the way to number one. Back in 1966, this weekend, the Metropolitan Opera opens at New York's Lincoln Center. Back in 1974, this weekend, TV show Shindig appears for the very first time. And back in 1978, Grateful Dead become the first rock band from the West to headline a concert in Cairo, where they play their famous Pyramids concert. And back in 1989, Natalie Cole marries record producer Andre Fisher. And back in 1994, this weekend, it was Carreras, Domingo, and Pavarotti, the three tenors in concert, hitting number one on the charts. The three tenors, Nessun Dorma. In local rock news, we see this article published in the Midtown Raleigh News on September 7th, 2011, Music with a Purpose, commemorating 9/11. This article is written by Jennifer Gregory. When the planes hit the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001, 10-month-old Claire Williams hadn't even taken her first steps. But on Saturday, the now 10-year-old Wake Forest girl took the stage with her pink guitar in hand and to play the 9/11 benefit concert with 60 other students from Give to Live Guitar Studio. I think it's very important to honor people who died in 9/11, said Claire, whose parents have talked to her about the attacks. Claire said she enjoys playing her guitar because she gets to jam and play with her friends, but playing benefits is her favorite part. I love helping people, and music is one of my favorite things, so being able to help people at the same time that I play my guitar is awesome, Claire said. On the 10th anniversary of 9/11, Bob Meyer, owner of Give to Live Guitar Studio, headed to New York City to deliver all the money raised at the concert to the Michael Lynch Foundation. The organization provides college scholarships to children of firefighters and other 9/11 victims. The six-hour show featured a wide variety of music with 30-minute sets performed by kids' bands, intermixed with solos from younger students. You have a band of teenagers performing rock songs, followed by a 5-year-old singing a song from Sesame Street, Meyer said. Many of the songs to be performed were selected by firefighters from New York City Engine 66 as songs that are meaningful to them about 9/11, such as Bruce Springsteen's The Rising. The article skips down. Meyer, who is from New York City, was living there part-time during the attacks. When he returned to his building after 9/11, he learned that many of his neighbors were now single moms because their husbands had never made it home. The article skips down and ends with this. One of his main goals as a guitar teacher is to show people that music is a tool that they have to bring awareness to people who need help, Meyer said. Music should be entertaining, but music with a purpose is even higher. And in commemoration of last weekend's 9/11 ceremonies, we see this article from Los Angeles Times. Jackson's 9/11 ballad resounds. This was published on the 4th of September, 2011. Los Angeles. Country singer Alan Jackson has been tapped to perform his post-September 11 song, Where Were You When the World Stopped Turning, at the Concert for Hope at the Washington National Cathedral on the 10th anniversary of the terrorist attack. President Barack Obama also will speak at the event, which will culminate a week of observances to commemorate the anniversary. Jackson's song became perhaps the most widely played of the responses from musicians to the events of September 11, 2001, and it will be highlighted Monday on an A&E biography special, When Pop Culture Saved America.
Where were you when the world stopped turning on that September day? Were you in the yard with your wife and children, or working on some stage in L.A.? Did you stand there in shock at the sight of that black smoke rising against that blue sky? Did you shout out in anger and fear for your neighbor, or did you just sit down and cry?
Jackson had introduced the song about 2 months after the attacks. During the Country Music Association Awards telecast from Nashville, Tennessee, singing what amounted to a string of questions without easy answers. Did you weep for the children who lost their dear loved ones and pray for the ones who don't know? Did you rejoice for the people who walked from the rubble and sob for the ones left below? The vast majority of Jackson's repertoire up to that point, and pretty much since, had consisted of songs about love, the joys and sorrows of small-town life, the hopes, dreams, and struggles of working people. The closest he's gotten to a political statement is some of those songs detailing the hard times blue-collar workers have faced in recent years. I find I generally don't like songs where people express their political views, the soft-spoken Georgia native told the Los Angeles Times not long after he'd written it and started singing it in a public. And this one isn't political. It's still pretty simple. He said he'd had a sleepless night shortly after the attacks, woke up with a head full of questions, and then fashioned them into the song. I felt like I was just reporting, Jackson said, asking the kinds of questions anybody might ask. Did you feel guilty because you're a survivor? In a crowded room, did you feel alone? Did you call up your mother and tell her you loved her? Did you dust off that Bible at home? In fact, he said he was initially hesitant about the song in a couple of ways. First, he was reluctant to take on such a loaded issue, but he said the fact that the song came to him relatively quickly convinced him it was worth doing. Did you open your eyes, hope it never happened? Close your eyes and not go to sleep? Did you notice the sunset the first time in ages? Or speak to some stranger on the street? After writing it, Jackson wasn't sure he ought to play it in public. I didn't want it to look like I was trying to sell my career with this tragedy, he said, but family members and friends persuaded him otherwise. He also didn't release it as a single again because he didn't want it to be viewed as something he was trying to sell. Last year, when Jackson had his star added to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, he was asked whether he still plays "Where Were You?" He said he's been surprised by how many people continue to request it in concert, long after the original shock of the events of that day subsided. He said he'd expected fans to be interested for a few weeks or months after the song first surfaced, but a show hasn't gone by when someone doesn't ask for it, so he's kept it in his set list. Did you go to church and hold hands with some strangers? Did you stand in line and give your own blood? Did you just stay home and cling tight to your family? Thank God you had somebody to love. I don't know where it came from, Jackson said. It's like one of my favorite things Hank Williams said when he was asked about where he got his songs. He said, "I just hold the pen. God writes the song. That's how I feel about this one."
Some good things he gave us, and the greatest is love.
So what do you know about today's featured artist, Natalie and Nat King Cole? Well, according to this bio, published in LyricsFreak.com, we see this about Nat. He was born Nathaniel Adam Coles in Montgomery, Alabama, on St. Patrick's Day in 1919, and his family moved to Chicago, Illinois, while he was still a child. There, his father became a Baptist minister. Cole learned to play the organ from his mother, Perlina, the church organist. His first performance at age 4 was of "Yes, We Have No Bananas." He began formal lessons at the age of 12, eventually learning not only jazz and gospel music, but also European classical music, performing, as he said, from Bach to Rachmaninoff. The family lived in the Bronzeville neighborhood of Chicago. Cole would sneak out of the house and hang around outside the clubs, listening to artists such as Louis Armstrong and Earl Fathah Hines. Inspired by the playing of Earl Hines, Cole began his performing career in the mid-30s. While still a teenager, adopting the name Nat Cole, his older brother, Eddie Coles, a bass player, soon joined Cole's band, and the brothers made their first recording in 1936 under Eddie's name. They were also regular performers at clubs. In fact, Cole acquired the nickname King, performing at one jazz club, a nickname presumably reinforced by the otherwise unrelated nursery rhyme about Old King Cole. He was also a pianist in a national tour of Broadway theater legend U.B. Blake's revue Shuffle Along. When it suddenly failed in Long Beach, California, Cole decided to remain there. In January 1937, Cole married dancer Nadine Robinson, who was also in the musical Shuffle Along, and moved to L.A., where he formed the Nat King Cole Trio. The trio consisted of Cole on piano, Oscar Moore on guitar, and Wesley Prince on double bass. The trio played in Los Angeles throughout the late 1930s and recorded many radio transcriptions. Cole's role was that of piano player and leader of the combo. Is it a common misconception that Cole's singing career did not start until a drunken barroom patron demanded that he sing Sweet Lorraine? In fact, Cole has gone on record saying that the fabricated story sounded good, so I just let it ride. Cole frequently sang in between instrumental numbers. Noticing that people started to request more vocal numbers, he obliged. Yet the story of the insistent customer is not without some truth. There was a customer who requested a certain song one night, but it was a song that Cole did not know. So instead, he sang Sweet Lorraine. The trio was tipped 15 cents for the performance, a nickel apiece. The King Cole Trio signed with the fledgling Capitol Records in 1943. Revenues from Cole's record sales fueled much of Capitol Records' success during that period. The revenue is believed to have played a significant role in financing the distinctive Capitol Records building on Hollywood and Vine in L.A. Completed in 1956, it was the world's first circular office building and became known as the house that Nat built. Cole was considered a leading jazz pianist. His revolutionary lineup of piano, guitar, and bass in the time of the big bands became a popular setup for jazz trios. It was emulated by many musicians, among them Art Tatum, Earl Garner, Oscar Peterson, and blues pianist Ray Charles. He also performed as a pianist on sessions with Lester Young and Lionel Hampton. Although Cole would never be considered a rocker, the song can be seen as anticipating the first rock and roll records. Indeed, Bo Diddley, who performed similar transformations of folk material, counted Cole as an influence.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Beginning in the late 1940s, Cole began recording and performing more pop-oriented material for mainstream audiences, often accompanied by a string orchestra. His stature as a popular icon was cemented during this period by hits such as The Christmas Song, which is playing in the background now. Cole recorded that tune, by the way, four times between 1946 and 1961. This final version, recorded in stereo, is the one most often heard today. He also recorded Mona Lisa in 1950, Too Young, the number one song in 1951, and his signature tune, Unforgettable, also in 1951. This shift to pop music led some jazz critics and fans to accuse Cole of selling out.
They know that Santa's on his way.
On November 5, 1956, the Nat King Cole Show debuted on NBC TV. The Cole program was the first of its kind, hosted by an African American, which created controversy at the time. In 1964, Cole made one of his final TV appearances on the Jack Benny program. In his typically magnanimous fashion, Benny allowed his guest star to steal the show at a time when racism was still rampant in America. Cole sang When I Fall in Love in perhaps his finest and most memorable performance. Cole was introduced as the best friend a song ever had.
A cigarette that bears a lipstick traces, an airline ticket to romantic places, and still my heart has wings.
Cole fought racism all his life and refused to perform in segregated venues. In 1956, he was assaulted on stage during a concert in Birmingham, Alabama, while singing the song Little Girl, by three members of the North Alabama White Citizens Council. The three male attackers ran down the aisles of the auditorium towards Cole and his band. Although local law enforcement quickly ended the invasion of the stage, the ensuing rush toppled Cole from his piano bench and injured his back. Cole did not finish the concert and never again performed in the South. In 1948, Cole purchased a house in the all-white Hancock Park neighborhood of Los Angeles. Members of the Property Owners Association told Cole they did not want any undesirables moving in. And Cole replied, "Neither do I. And if I see anybody undesirable coming in here, I'll be the first to complain." The Ku Klux Klan, still active in L.A. well into the 50s, responded by placing a burning cross on his front lawn. Cole did manage to record some hit singles during the 60s, including the country-flavored hit Ramblin' Rose in August of 62, as well as Those Lazy, Hazy, Crazy Days of Summer, his final hit, reaching number 6 on the pop charts. Cole was a heavy smoker of cool menthol cigarettes. He believed smoking kept his voice low. He would, in fact, smoke several cigarettes in quick succession before recording for this very purpose. He died of lung cancer on February 15, 1965, at St. John's Hospital in Santa Monica, California. Cole was inducted into both the Alabama Music Hall of Fame and the Alabama Jazz Hall of Fame. In 1990, he was awarded the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award, and in 1997 was inducted into the Downbeat Jazz Hall of Fame, and in 2007 he was inducted into the Hit Parade Hall of Fame. Cole's brother, Freddie Cole, and Cole's daughter, Natalie Cole, are also singers. So what do you know about Natalie? Well, according to this bio by Gary Brumbaugh, published in IMDb.com, we see the following.
How strange, how sweet.
You go to my head.
Stephanie Natalie Maria Cole was born on February 6th, 1950, and grew up in a heavily musical atmosphere in Los Angeles, exclusive Hancock Park area. In addition to her father, Mother Maria had been a background vocalist with the Duke Ellington outfit. Natalie herself grew up surrounded by the likes of Ella Fitzgerald and Frank Sinatra, who were considered family. Singing on one of her dad's Christmas albums and performing by age 11, her father's early death brought emotional scars and perhaps induced a self-imposed lack of musical focus. In the midst of her ebb and flow R&B success, Natalie decided in 1991 to record a new CD, Unforgettable with Love, paying homage to her late father. With the help and encouragement of family, she rearranged and re-recorded some of his greatest songs in the same studio that he recorded, Capitol Studios. Used some of the same musicians and even recreated some of his signature songs. The title tune, Unforgettable, with a technological effect that appeared as if they were duetting together. Never before had this been pulled off and marketed so successfully. The CD was an instant easy listening sensation. Not only did it sell well over 30 million copies, it would become an 8-time over platinum winner. It earned an armload of awards on Grammy night, including Album of the Year and Record of the Year. Through it all, Natalie continues to vocally shine, what with the recent release of the CD Still Unforgettable, in which she nurses the classics as only she can, and duets once again with her dad, Nat King Cole, on Walking My Baby Back Home, which will close out today's program. So how'd you do on those trivia questions today? Answer number one, the number one hit by Question Mark and the Mysterians in 1966 was called 96 Tears. That was answer B. And answer number two, the singer who gave each of his 8 children a name that started with the same letter as his first name, A, is Antoine Dominique Domino Jr. He's also known as Fats Domino.
We stop for a while, he gives me a smile, I snuggle my head to his chest. We started to bet, and that's when I get my powder all over his vest.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. If you have a suggestion for an artist, group, or genre of music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson at 832-5138. So long, until next time.
She's afraid of the dark, so I have to park outside of her door till it's light.